People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Our symphony season, our spring season, is very much underway. We've had two concerts thus far. And in town is Arjen Tien, who in fact is conducting the rest of the season. And I've managed to get him into the studio between rehearsals to come and talk to us about some really rather interesting works in this season. We've had already a work by Florence Price. We've had a Kourou symphony. And we've got Mahler coming up and a host of other things. So, Arjen, welcome back to Cape Town.
Thank you very much. Great to be back.
You've been often, you've been to this country and to Cape Town many, many times, haven't you?
Yes, I lost track of the number, but it must be more than 80 times over
80.
The past. Yeah, 80 over the past 26 years.
And that involves Cape Town, Durban, and Johannesburg, doesn't
That's right, yes. And the unfortunately no longer existing Chamber Orchestra of South Africa and also the Free State in Bloem.
That's right. Yeah. And when you get a call to come out here, are you pleased or do you think, oh no, not them again?
No, I'm really pleased. I can be open about that. I'm really pleased and especially also with Cape Town. I really enjoy the relationship with the orchestra, and it's always for me a little bit like coming home to be back in the Cape.
I just want to put things into perspective here, Arjen, so you're going to have to listen to me reading about how wonderful you are for a moment, because he's back in Cape Town not only for these four symphony concerts but also the sixth South African Conductors Competition. Arjen is Professor of Conducting at the Conservatoire of Amsterdam and Maastricht Conservatoire. He's current Principal Conductor of the VU Orchestra in Amsterdam and has a busy international career. And just looking back, he studied with Philip Hirschhorn, violin, and viola with Ron Efrat at the Utrecht Conservatory. He obtained his diploma with distinction. He was a member of the Radio Philharmonic Orchestra and made his solo debut with the Salzburg Chamber Soloists in Sao Paulo and in Brazil. But he also enjoys working with and supporting young talent as Professor of Conducting, which we'll go into as part of your conducting competition here in this country. But what I just thought, you obviously had an input into this program. As I said, we've had the Morane Symphony, which I think many people might have been surprised how enjoyable it was.
Yeah, the Fagin Symphony.
The Fagin, yeah, yes, the Fagin. Yeah. And yes. Now we've got this Fazzolo
To My Country by Morane. Yeah.
What attracted you to these works, or how did you put the programs together?
Obviously, I talked to Louis Heinemann when we were discussing how to put the program together for the spring season, and I felt and still feel strongly about the huge legacy of South African music and South African composers in particular in this country. And I also am a little bit puzzled why they are not being performed much more frequently. Because, first of all, I think contemporary musicians like myself and like the Cape Town Philharmonic and the other orchestras have a duty to perform contemporary music, but also and especially music of your home ground, being South Africa, and especially if you know that a lot of these composers are celebrated overseas and are hardly known or being played here in South
Africa.
That's
a very good point.
I think that's a pity. Yeah. I would like to stress this legacy and also show both the orchestras and the Cape Town Philharmonic in particular here, and the audiences, that they actually should and can be proud of their own legacy, and they should embrace that more.
These works that you've chosen are for full orchestra, that Kourou Symphony, for example,
that's
of Fagin,
right.
And now this Fazzo work as well is for a full modern symphony orchestra.
Yes, it is. The Morane Fazzolaiso I have performed last year with the Kiev Symphony Orchestra that is now residing in Germany for obvious reasons.
Yes,
they cannot continue playing in their own country. And I played that work there, and that went down very well. And I like the work. It's an old work, so it's by no means contemporary music, because it's been composed in 1942, 43, and been performed a lot in Europe. Not enough here in South Africa. So I thought it would be a nice, it's a short piece, it's about 6-7 minutes tops. So it's nice to have that as an overture. And there is a nice connection with Morane and with Gideon Fagan. Fagan, who studied with Vaughan Williams in England and was a celebrated conductor and composer in England. And when he came back to South Africa, he took a lot of that that experience back to South Africa, and you can actually hear, or probably some people have already heard it in the symphony. Mm-hmm. You hear influences of Vaughan Williams.
I'm sure that people who were at the concert who heard the Carew Symphony will absolutely agree with you with that sort of Vaughan Williams feel. You also, I remember when you spoke about it ahead of the recording of the performance, you spoke about it being like Pieneff's paintings.
Yes.
That's a very interesting analogy.
Yes. I got in touch, or I got acquainted with quite a lot of his paintings at the La Motte Museum
on the
La Motte Wine Estate. And when they decided they needed a new range of labels for a new wine, they decided to use a few etches that they had at home by Pieneff. And then they thought, we must do something more with Pieneff. And they contacted his daughter that is living in London. And they decided to buy most of the collection. And
yes,
they have a beautiful oversight of Pieneff at the La Motte Wine Estate, from his early paintings through all the periods. And I think it's fascinating. And what struck me when I was working on the Fagan Symphony is that the middle and the late period of the paintings of Fagan, of Pieneff.
Interesting, you made
yes,
that.
Yes, Freudian.
Freudian, yeah.
They breathe very much the same approach, that actually of an African descent person who is experiencing the vast barrenness and solitude of the Karoo, and you can feel that in the paintings of Pieneff, and you feel that in the same manner, much like an impressionistic experience. In the Karoo Symphony.
Have you ever been to the Karoo, as a matter of interest?
Yes.
On your many visits here, have you managed to get to the Karoo?
Yes, I've been to Oudtshoorn once or twice, and of course that's only the Klein Karoo, but still I've at least tasted a little bit of the environment there.
Ariane, there's lots to talk to you about, but let's take your first music break. I'm always interested to know what a conductor is going to choose, and I'm intrigued that your first piece is chamber music, the Mozart String Quintet.
Yes. I feel that all music, by default, is actually and should be chamber music. And I have learned and enjoyed and embraced and loved listening and playing chamber music when I was still playing so much. And this particular work, the G Minor String Quintet by Mozart, has a special place. I've played it quite a few times on various occasions. And it's a work that he composed shortly after his mother passed away. And you can feel that G minor that has actually that suggestion of a lost love or close person. And we all know he was very close to his mother. And to me, that work is just a very melancholic and beautiful report of Mozart's feelings, which is rare with Mozart, but because most of his work, his greatest and brightest work, sometimes were composed in his most dire circumstances, mm-hmm. and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So you usually would not feel listening to his works of what the context in his personal life was. But this is one of the exceptions, having been composed so shortly after his mother passing.
Thank you.
That's part of the string quintet in G minor by Mozart, the first movement. The first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, the conductor Arjan Tin, who's in town with the current symphony season. And we spoke about Mozart having just lost his mother there, Arjan. And G minor, like the 40th symphony, Mozart was able to make G minor sound, I think, even more sad than other composers managed to make G minor. Do you agree, or am I completely wrong?
No, I completely agree with you. I think Mozart and his contemporaries and even his successors were very much aware of what keys or what tonalities they would choose for specific works. And the tonalities have such a strong statement by themselves to the character and the mood of a certain work. I really believe in that, and I've done quite a bit of research on all the various tonalities, and they really helped me understanding what the composer thought and why the composer chose that particular key, and that helps with interpreting the works. And I think we should all be much more aware of that aspect in modern days than most people, unfortunately, are. In those days, all musicians knew exactly G minor. They knew loss of a loved one.
Yeah. It's interesting you should say that, because when you come to harmony and keys like that, it's not really the sort of man in the street type thing to get into. But no. I think most people who enjoy music can tell that this is in a minor key, or this is in a major key, or this we've now gone into a minor key, to be aware of the harmonic activity that's going on.
Yes, and then, of course, a lot of people will still know if it's E flat major. A lot of people can relate to the fact that that is heroic, partly because of Beethoven's Third or Heldenleben by Strauss. And in many cases it is, but in the Magic Flute, E flat major has a completely different connotation. And I think it's necessary to know these subtleties. And
E flat major is the key associated with the Rhine.
Yes.
Thus Rheingold begins, Wagner's Ring Cycle begins.
Or with Schumann's Rhenic Symphony.
Yes, the Rhenic Symphony, there you go.
Yeah, but in Mozart's case, Mozart being a Freemason, E flat major with three flats basically suggests the 3 degrees in Freemasonry.
Oh, that's interesting.
And the third degree with three flats is the master degree.
Yeah. And my favorite Mozart symphony is in E flat.
39.
Yes.
Yeah, lovely.
There we go.
And it's interesting because the last three works he wrote out of his own need. It wasn't
a commission.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
But now we're talking about your concerts and these very interesting and intriguing programs. This one coming up this week, which has the Fazzoleso. It also has, you've chosen the later version of the Petrushka suite by Stravinsky, haven't
That's
you?
That's right, yeah.
Is there a reason for that? Is it the more colorful one? Is it the more interesting?
For me, the succession of the movements he chose makes sense in the story. And also the fact that it is the last version that he wrote makes me believe that it was probably also his favorite. And and I can only think of a few recordings with Stravinsky at the helm, and then he was doing this version. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a reason for that. And I always like to respect the composer.
Of course.
And that's why I chose 45 rather than 19.
But it's interesting also that like the Mahler, which we're coming to, is virtuoso orchestral playing.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
You laugh. Because making the orchestra work hard.
Yeah, the orchestra's still talking to me, but they did mention it's quite a challenging program this month.
Yeah.
But I think it's good for the orchestra. It's good to challenge them, and it's I think it's also good to program pieces that works that haven't been played so frequently. And I've heard from both the audience and the orchestra and the staff that it's actually welcome to be a little bit more adventurous and
this
play
program,
more variety.
This program really is. Yeah. And the Saint-Saëns concerto in that program is sort of almost a breather, isn't it? Because it's well-known, it's well-loved.
Yes. And, of course, the Saint-Saëns basically starts with Bach. And it ends with Saint-Saëns.
You know what? I heard about that. It starts with Bach and ends with Offenbach.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yeah. No, and what I also think is interesting that Saint-Saëns and Stravinsky, at least for some time, were contemporaries.
Yes.
And the world is so completely different.
So different.
I think it's nice to juxtapose works like that. And the same thing with we're doing the 1945 version of Stravinsky. And then if you know, and realizing that the Fazzoletto by Moerane was composed in 1942-43.
Oh, I
didn't
know that.
2-3 years apart, these two pieces, and it's a world of difference, a completely different world.
Mm-hmm.
But I like putting those kind of things opposite each other to also show the audience what kind of different air and approach the music can breathe from a similar time period.
You said the orchestra is still talking to you because you made them work
yes.
very hard.
Yeah.
But also it must be hard work for you. I mean, you're the one that has to stand up there and know the work before
yes.
they even attempt it. So it must take, you know, a while to put together a program like this in your head.
That's right, yes. But I like doing that. I've been the artistic director for 6-7 years with the Chamber Orchestra in the Netherlands. That was actually called Magogo Chamber Orchestra. I've performed about 60 or 70 premieres and world premieres with that orchestra, and always trying to make programs that would make sense. The program, I feel, whenever you put together a program, it needs to convey a story, and that story can be comparing works, juxtaposing works. It can be a thematic a background, but it always needs to make sense somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you don't know it, you should still feel when it's being performed that there is a story behind it, that there's some sort of coherency.
That it fits into that evening.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, now I want to talk to you about Mahler, but before we do that, your second piece of music is from Brahms' Third Symphony, that lovely, almost autumnal third movement.
Yeah.
Is there a special reason you chose this?
You asked me, I should choose four pieces, which is of course impossible.
but okay,
I went for the challenge.
Yes, you did,
and
Mozart, came up with a good list, I have to say.
Thank you. For me, Mozart and Brahms have a very special place in my heart, and if there are any favorites, I think those two are way up there. And Brahms, I love the language, I love his music, I love his attitude, the fact that so much of Brahms was lost to the fireplace by his own hand,
exactly,
shows how critical he was.
Yeah.
And the fact that basically everything we know by Brahms are masterpieces, I think has a lot to do with that. And sometimes I feel that some contemporary composers should have that fierce self-criticism as well, and not just give us everything that they come up with, and sometimes maybe, have some reflection before they put it on the desk.
Well, let's listen to this third movement. We have the Berlin Philharmonic here, conducted by Niklas Anoncourt.
Thank you.
That was the third movement of the Symphony No. 3 by Brahms. That recording with the Berlin Philharmonic, conducted by Nicolas Anoncourt. And it was the second choice of my guest on People of Note this week, the conductor Arion Tin in Cape Town, to perform really quite an extraordinary program. And, by the way, we've come now to your next concert next week, which is the Mahler 7, the Symphony No. 7 by Mahler. And I have to say, and you admitted, we are both great Mahler fans. I adore Mahler. But this symphony is a tricky one. How would you answer that?
Yes. I must confess, it's a tricky one.
But for the players, the conductor, and the audience, isn't it? It's a tricky one.
Yes, in a sense. But I do feel that it's maybe one of the most accomplished ones when it comes down to form. And maybe also story. It's sometimes referred to as the Night Symphony, which basically refers to the first four movements, because the last movement is then in C major is day.
and where night he, where today.
Yeah, and I feel it's really growing on me, and analyzing it and living with it and working on it.
You've also seen the original manuscript score, haven't you?
I have it, actually, the entire facsimile in my possession. And it's wonderful. It's incredibly clear. It's so clear and well written by Mahler that you could almost conduct from that score.
Oh, yeah.
And but it's really special to be so close to the hand, literally, of the composer, and see how he jots down certain
and how he corrects notes. Things as well, because yeah. I've seen that facsimile.
Yeah, and it's nice to see that process and to see, literally the handwork of the composer.
Mm-hmm.
The Seventh Symphony, I think it shows a lot of his life. And there was a lot of hardship and personal agony and sadness. He has been in touch from a young age with death.
Yes.
In his family, his siblings, later his parents, later his children, and hardship also with his wife, as we all know, and a difficult person for himself and for people around him. And what was actually nice for me to find out reading about this symphony, that he had composed the second and the fourth movement already a few years earlier.
Even when he was writing the sixth, apparently, yes, which is such a different symphony,
yeah,
he right. was able to write those two middle movements.
Yes, and then later the scherzo also was sort of inserted, and then he didn't really know. He was stuck a little bit in his compositional process, and he didn't really know how to proceed, until at some day he was being rowed across the Lake of Meinich, where his Komponierhäuschen, his composer's hut, is. And then he felt that the oars of the boat, the rowing boat, hitting the water, and the water dripping off the oars, that gave him the inspiration, actually, of the beginning of the symphony.
Yes.
And although it's not a literal quote of the oars, you can feel that, and you can feel the sense and the atmosphere until the tenor horn comes in with the big solo.
And quite a big horn solo at that point.
Yeah, and a very interesting choice of instrument, a bit out of the ordinary in the symphony world. So yeah, and things like that helped me a lot, understanding the symphony, where it's coming from, and his personal situation, and his hardship also with the Vienna Opera, and him then moving to New York, and of course his very special relationship with the Netherlands and with the Concertgebouw Orchestra and Mengelberg.
That's right. Yeah. It was almost the center of Mahler's music under Mengelberg, wasn't it, for a while?
Yes.
The Concertgebouw Amsterdam just took over Mahler's music with Mengelberg.
Yes, and he's both conducted his own symphonies there, and Mahler has conducted, or Mengelberg has conducted most of his symphonies there. In the 1920s, Amsterdam was the place where the first international Mahler Fest took place, and now the upcoming season We have another Malerfest
now in Amsterdam,
and all his works being performed by various orchestras, not just the Concertgebouw Orchestra, but also the other top Dutch orchestras and international other orchestras that will come and visit Amsterdam to perform those.
But you also spoke, Arjan, just when we were talking before the interview, about this line of Mahler expert conductors from Mengelberg. We have Haitink.
Yes. Edo de Waard.
Edo de Waard.
Yeah, and Edo de Waard, he basically has accepted me as a viola player in the Radio Philharmonic. And, and I've played all these symphonies with de Waard in the Radio Philharmonic. Yeah, I've played all the Mahler symphonies. So in a way, there's a direct line being handed. And it's very special to be a little bit part of that tradition.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so out here on the tip of Africa to conduct something as, I want to say complex, because it is complex, as Mahler 7.
Yeah.
But it's in a fantastic journey, isn't it? I mean, we spoke about the first movement. That second movement, Nachtmusik 1, with the wonderful sounds of nature at night in a forest.
Yes, birds, there's a lot of bird calls, and it's very pastoral in a way. And he has a wonderful way of combining that pastoral attitude with a night and somewhat daunting.
Yes, daunting indeed. Atmosphere. Haunted sound.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's the scherzo, which is kind of typical Mahler.
Yes.
And then that second Nachtmusik includes a guitar and a mandolin and cowbells. We heard them before as well.
Yes.
Which is such a different sound world.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that especially that fourth movement is very much in the Schubert tradition of Ständchen, of almost Unterhaltungsmusik, entertaining, almost dinner music, of course, of the highest level. But when you approach it like that, and that goes for the other movements as well, I think the symphony becomes much more approachable and much more understandable. And also knowing those stories, as we just mentioned about the first movement, but then the day will break through in the last movement,
because it really opens with an explosion.
Really, yeah. And he is also recorded to have said at the rehearsal, "Okay, now we go into day."
Yeah.
And then of course it's almost a literal quote of the Meistersinger overture.
Yes.
And even Lehar, the Merry Widow, which was one of his favorite operettas, and at some point his wife even took him to a pub where that was being played, and then they wanted to dance on that music. And you can, although in the Lehar version it's a 3-4 time signature, and in his quote it's in 4-4 or a la breve sort of feel.
Oh yes.
And so these kind of elements make the music so much more approachable and
so
alive.
The trick is to listen very carefully and to see if you can spot those two, the Meistersinger, because it's not easy to spot them. And it took me forever to work out where they are.
Yeah, it's tricky, but it is there, and then once you've heard it, you cannot unhear it.
Yes.
And then, of course, when he was composing the Mahler symphony, the Seventh Symphony, he was also working on the Entführung opera. And you can even hear some reminiscence of that opera in his last movement.
Just as we go now to our next piece of music, which is the American Quartet by Dvorak, I want to ask you something special about chamber music after that. But you've chosen this American string quartet. Which movement are we going to hear?
The first movement.
First movement, okay.
Yes, with the big viola solo.
I see, that's why you... Okay. Everybody's favorite string quartet, the string quartet by Dvorak number 12, the American quartet, that was part of the opening movement, and another choice of my guest, the conductor of our symphony season at the moment, Arjen Tin. And we spoke about the great Mahler, but interestingly, the last program features your wife, Maria Dutoy, whom you took away from us.
Yes. I do apologize.
And she's playing two 20th century pieces, isn't she? She's playing Konrad Assmann, which I think is a premiere.
It's a world premiere.
A world premiere. And then David Earl, which is a local premiere.
That's a local, yeah.
Right.
Yes. David Earl has been performed. The world premiere was in Durban, and then Maria has performed it in the United States. And we performed it together again earlier this year at the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam, where David was again present. And now we will have the Cape premiere. And David will be here again.
Oh, good.
Present. Yeah. Okay. And it's both that work and also the work of Konrad Assmann. Both works have been dedicated to Maria.
Very good, very good. But and rightly so, because she's a bit of a star, even though she's your wife, but you know that anyway. Yeah. And now, these difficult questions, are they works that are, I know you support contemporary music,
yes.
And I think one of the battles we have with contemporary music is some of it is quite inaccessible very often.
Yes.
Some of it isn't.
Yeah.
How would you describe these two works? Are they relatively accessible?
The fact that David is still alive makes it contemporary music, but the style he writes is extremely accessible. I would say sort of neo-romantic style. It's a beautiful, melancholic lyric work. And the last movement, very interestingly, is based on a medieval melody, Le Marmé. And he made a series of variations, lyric variations, very technically demanding virtuosic variations. So it's absolutely a beautiful concerto, and it's already been performed on three continents, and it's an instant audience pleaser.
Oh, good. And the Assmann one, which is now a premiere, world premiere?
Yes. Assmann is it's an extremely well-written piece. He's a real talent. Of course, he's much younger.
Mm-hmm.
He's a composer in residence of the Cape Town Philharmonic. And it's an extremely difficult work with quite a few new techniques, multiphonics. So if you hear a clarinet, it's one thing, but to hear a clarinet playing with two, three different notes at the same time, it's quite a novelty.
I was going to say, yes.
But it has a lot of very groovy sections in it that will definitely go down very well instantly with the audience as well. But it's a difficult piece.
Poor Maria having to work so hard.
She's been practicing enormously hard for the past year on that concerto, and she said it's probably the most difficult concerto she's ever played.
Well, and that's on the 26th, and you're ending then the season with Mendelssohn's lovely Third Symphony.
Yes,
the Scottish.
Yeah. It's one of probably one of my favorite Mendelssohn symphonies.
Oh,
I love the story behind it of Mary, Queen Mary. He visited when he was a youngster. Yes, he visited the sites in Scotland where she was beheaded and captivated, and you can just feel that pain, if you like, that he felt being at that very spot where she
spent
her last moments.
I'm sure you know his famous quote. He wrote home saying that as he was standing there, the opening bars of his Scottish Symphony came to his mind.
Yes.
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 So that's...
It's beautiful. Yeah.
It's a great work.
Yeah.
And then you can heave a sigh of relief as you go off home after all
that. Even after that, I'm not going home, and neither is Maria, because the weekend after that, the 3 days following, we're going to record three clarinet concertos, all dedicated to Maria, those two concertos, but also the Roelof Temming clarinet concerto that she premiered earlier in South Africa, in Johannesburg. Also a very nice work. And those three concertos will be recorded for Channel Classics, and they will be released later next year.
Mm-hmm. International release.
In 25 countries.
In 25 countries, goodness me. But then there's also the conductors' competition, which you're part of the panel, one of the adjudicators.
Yeah, that's also very dear to me. I love teaching and working with young talents, and I really think that the conducting competition, which is unique, and also the setup is unique to South Africa, I think we really owe a great word of gratitude to both Louis Heinemann and the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra for enabling that and allowing so many young aspiring conductors to get lessons, because the first two rounds of this South African conductors competition are basically masterclasses, and then it narrows down until we have three finalists, and then in the finale they are allowed to work with the Cape Town Philharmonic Orchestra.
Before that, during all these rounds, they mostly work with piano or string quartet, don't they?
Yes.
To get the right sort of, and you people are able to tell
yeah,
what they do with their technique.
Their gestures.
The gestures.
And how and they perceive the score.
That's
and,
right.
And how well they know the score.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say, we've had wonderful pianists with José Díaz and François Dutoit. We were really lucky to have them, such fine pianists that also know how to play on a conductor.
Yeah, and how to respond to a conductor if the conductor asks them to do something special.
Yes.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there now. We have had a fascinating conversation. I hope you agree.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
But we're going to end. You've got another piece lurking here with Sam Debussy, his prelude, L'après-midi d'enfant.
Prelude à l'après-midi d'enfant by Debussy. It's a very dear work to me that I've played many times under the conductor Jean Fournet.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with Jean Fournet. Jean Fournet even knew firsthand Ravel. And he passed away a few years ago, unfortunately. But I had some lessons with him. I had the pleasure of playing for him, assisting him, and he even was a close friend, I'd say, acquaintance, but an authority on French music.
But this piece, incidentally, talking about. This piece must be tricky to conduct, to get the right atmosphere, the right tempo, but just the right mood for this sort of languid afternoon.
Yes, it's a beautiful piece. It's one of I love conducting it. I also love teaching it. It's definitely master material, not for a bachelor. And the entire piece is based on a sonnet by Mallarmé. And Debussy follows the structure of the sonnet and even follows the story of the sonnet. And you can hear those specific moments in the sonnet in his prelude. And I think that's just wonderful.
Are we going to hear that recording with Jean Fournet?
Yes.
Playing. Okay. So here we have Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun. I won't try my French again. I've been speaking to Arian Tin, who's in town, and he's given you a jolly good reference and introduction to each of the concerts coming up this week, the following week, the last one on the 26th of September with the two clarinets with Maria Dutoy. So, Ariane, I'm sure we'll see you again here in Cape Town.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.